Welcome on board with EU Tours, Benvenuti a Firenze, welcome to Florence, the city of the Renaissance, the heart of Tuscany, and the jewel of Italian art and history. Today, you are about to enter one of the most extraordinary buildings in all of Italy, the Palazzo Vecchio. For over 700 years, this fortress palace has stood as the beating heart of Florence, a center of politics, a stage for power, a treasure chest of art, and a witness to some of the most dramatic stories in European history. Look up at its medieval walls, its crenellated battlements, and the soaring Arnolfo Tower reaching into the Tuscan sky. This is more than just stone. This is Florence's memory. And today, through this audio journey, you will walk not only through its rooms, but also through centuries of intrigue, glory, and legend. The story of the ground floor of Palazzo Vecchio. Step with me across the threshold of Palazzo Vecchio, the fortress palace that has guarded Florence for more than seven centuries. Its ground floor is the beginning of the journey, a space where stone and silence whisper the first secrets of the city's power. The fortress entrance in the late 13th century, when Arnolfo di Cambio designed the palace, the ground floor was conceived as a fortress as much as a seat of government. The entrance portal was built deliberately narrow and easily defendable, allowing guards to control who passed through. Above it, the Florentine Republic displayed coats of arms and painted symbols, making clear to all visitors that this was the house of the city, not of kings or lords. As you enter, imagine the clang of weapons and the murmur of civic guards. The stone pavement beneath your feet once echoed with the steps of soldiers assigned to protect the priori, the city's governing magistrates who lived upstairs. The ground floor was their shield. The courtyard of Michelozzo, beyond the guarded passage, you find yourself in a square of calm, the first courtyard, designed in 1453 by Michelozzo, the favored architect of the Medici. Where once there had been a rough medieval yard, Michelozzo created a refined cloister-like court. Columns of stucco and sandstone line the space, each one painted with delicate decorations. Look closely at their bases and capitals, grotesque masks, foliage, and heraldic emblems abound. Above, the vaults bloom with frescoes, a softer counterpoint to the fortress walls outside. This courtyard was more than an architectural delight. It was also a message. In the mid-15th century, Cosimo de' Medici sought to temper Florence's republican sternness with a new elegance befitting his family's rising influence. Visitors from Italy and beyond were meant to feel both impressed and at ease. The frescoes of lands far away in 1565, a century after Michelozzo's work, Giorgio Vasari and his assistants adorned the courtyard walls with frescoes commissioned by Duke Cosimo I de' Medici. These were no ordinary paintings. They depicted the towns and cities under Medici dominion, along with scenes from the lands of the Austrian Habsburgs, celebrating the marriage of Cosimo's son Francesco to Joanna of Austria. The effect was both political and symbolic. Every visitor walking through the ground floor was surrounded by painted evidence of Medici's strength, alliances, and global reach. The walls themselves spoke of Florence's power stretching far beyond Tuscany. The Fountain of Putta with dolphin at the center of the courtyard, water ripples in a small yet graceful fountain. Its playful bronze figure, a child wrestling with a dolphin, was crafted by Andrea del Verrocchio, the master of Leonardo da Vinci. Installed here in the 15th century, it brought life and music to the space. Imagine its fresh water once quenching the thirst of guards, clerks, and noble visitors alike. Over time, the fountain became not only decoration but also a symbol of Florence's ingenuity and mastery of bronze casting, arts that flourished in the Renaissance workshops just steps away. The armory and service rooms off the courtyard and along the ground floor were the palace's service chambers, storage rooms, stables, and, above all, the armory. Here weapons were kept ready in case of riot or foreign attack. In times of danger, the courtyard could be quickly transformed into a military staging point, filled with armed men preparing to defend the Republic or later the Medici Dukes. Imagine the contrast. One day the courtyard hosting a festive reception for foreign ambassadors, another day echoing with the clash of steel and the shouts of soldiers. A gateway to power. Thus the ground floor of Palazzo Vecchio was never just a passageway. It was a stage set for politics, a blending of fortress practicality, Medici propaganda, and Renaissance artistry. Visitors entered through stone walls meant to intimidate, passed under painted vaults meant to enchant, and emerged into upper halls where Florence's destiny was decided. Even today, as you stand in Michelozzo's courtyard and hear the trickle of Verrocchio's fountain, you can sense the layers of history, the medieval republic, the Medici Dukes, the Habsburg Alliance, the soldiers and clerks who bustled here daily. This ground floor was the threshold between ordinary Florence and the world of power, ceremony, and legend that lay above. Our first great stop inside is the most monumental chamber of all, the Hall of the 500, the Salone dei Cinquecento. The birth of the Hall of the 500. Imagine Florence in the late 15th century. It is a city trembling between faith and power. The mighty Medici family had been exiled, and the fiery Dominican friar Girolamo Savonarola was thundering sermons in the Duomo. In 1494, Florence declared itself a republic once again, determined to reject tyrants and embrace the will of the people. But a republic needs a home, a space vast enough to hold its new governing council of citizens. And so, in 1495, construction began on the grandest chamber ever built inside the Palazzo della Signoria, the Hall of the 500. Its very name came from the Consiglio Maggiore, the great council of 500 citizens who were to shape Florence's laws and destiny. The hall was designed by Simone del Poliolo, known as Il Cronaca. At nearly 54 meters long, 23 meters wide, and 18 meters high, it dwarfed every other civic chamber of the time. It was meant to embody the strength of the Florentine Republic, vast, solemn, and monumental. But politics in Florence were never stable. Soon, the tides of fortune would change again. Savonarola, fire, and fate. Savonarola, the friar who inspired the creation of this hall, envisioned it as a temple of pure democracy. Here, citizens would meet not to enrich themselves, but to govern in the light of virtue. But in 1498, only 3 years after the hall's completion, the same city that once cheered him turned against him. Accused of heresy, Savonarola was arrested, tried, and executed, burned at the stake in Piazza della Signoria, just steps away from the palazzo. The Hall of the 500 survived, but it had already witnessed its first drama of power and betrayal. The Medici return and a new purpose. By the early 16th century, the Medici family returned to Florence. With them came a new vision for the hall, no longer a democratic chamber, but a stage for Medici grandeur. In 1503, the Gonfaloniere Piero Soderini commissioned two of the greatest artists in history to decorate the walls with scenes of Florentine military victories. One wall was assigned to Leonardo da Vinci, tasked with painting the epic Battle of Anghiari. On the opposite wall, Michelangelo Buonarroti was to depict the Battle of Cascina. It was a clash of geniuses, Leonardo, the master of motion and drama, and Michelangelo, the sculptor of heroic bodies. Leonardo da Vinci's Battle of Anghiari. Leonardo prepared a massive fresco showing Florentine knights clashing with Milanese forces. At its center was a whirlwind of men and horses fighting for a standard, a scene so violent, so intense, that Giorgio Vasari later called it a masterwork of fury and power. But Leonardo experimented with a new painting technique, applying pigments onto plaster with heat. The experiment failed. The paint dripped, the figures blurred, and the great fresco was abandoned. Still, copies survive. Rubens and other artists preserved sketches of Leonardo's masterpiece, ensuring that its legend would never fade. Michelangelo's Battle of Cascina. Meanwhile, Michelangelo envisioned soldiers bathing in the Arno River, suddenly ambushed by enemies. He drew muscular figures leaping into action, their bodies twisting with energy. Yet Michelangelo never began painting. In 1505, Pope Julius II summoned him to Rome to design his tomb and, later, to paint the Sistine Chapel ceiling. Florence lost him to history. The two greatest frescoes that might have transformed the hall were never finished. But their ghost still lingers. Some even believe Leonardo's painting remains hidden beneath the later works of Vasari, who discreetly painted the phrase Cerca Trova, look and you shall find, on a battle standard, perhaps a secret clue to the lost masterpiece. Cosimo I and Vasari's transformation. When Cosimo I de' Medici rose to power in 1540, the Palazzo Vecchio became a ducal palace. Cosimo wanted the hall not as a place of republican debate, but as a theater of Medici triumph. He called upon Giorgio Vasari, the painter, architect, and biographer of Renaissance artists, to transform the hall. Vasari raised the ceiling, creating a coffered roof adorned with allegories of Florence's greatness. He painted enormous frescoes on the walls, glorifying Medici victories over Pisa and Siena. Battles were no longer republican struggles, they were dynastic propaganda, celebrating Cosimo as the savior of Tuscany. The unfinished visions of Leonardo and Michelangelo vanished behind Vasari's grandeur. The hall became a monument to Medici power, a stage of politics and power. Over the centuries, the Salone dei Cinquecento continued to serve as a stage for history. It hosted ducal ceremonies, theatrical performances, and political events. In the 19th century, when Florence briefly became the capital of a united Italy, 1865-1871, the hall served as the chamber of the national parliament. Imagine, Italy's newborn government gathering under Vasari's painted skies. Today, the hall is one of the most breathtaking rooms in Florence, a place where every stone and brushstroke whispers stories of ambition, genius, and fate. Experience the hall today. As you stand inside, look up at Vasari's gilded ceiling. Each square tells a story of Cosimo's victories. Look at the monumental frescoes on the walls, wars frozen in triumph, warriors captured in eternal battle. And then, in your imagination, peel back the layers of paint. Try to glimpse Leonardo's furious horses, Michelangelo's rippling bodies, and the dream of a republic that once filled this vast chamber with the voices of 500 citizens. This is the Hall of the 500, a place where Florence's past still breathes, where art and politics collided, and where the echoes of Leonardo, Michelangelo, Vasari, Savonarola, and the Medici still linger in the air. Palazzo Vecchio Audio Guide, Part 2, Medici Apartments, Eleonora's Chapel, Secret Passages, and Arnolfo Tower. Welcome back, dear guest of EU Tours. You have just left the monumental Salone dei Cinquecento, the Hall of the 500, where Florence's destiny was forged in the clash of politics and art. Now, our journey takes us deeper into the private world of the Medici, the rulers who transformed this fortress into a Renaissance palace. Here, beyond the public halls, lies another universe, the intimate apartments of Duke Cosimo I de' Medici and his Spanish bride, Eleonora di Toledo. The Medici move in. In 1540, Cosimo I made a decision that would change the Palazzo Vecchio forever. Until then, this building had been the austere seat of the Florentine Republic, a civic fortress designed to intimidate. But Cosimo was not interested in Republican modesty. He was building a dynasty. And so he chose to move his family into this medieval palace, making it his residence and court. Imagine the transformation: cold stone rooms warmed with tapestries, walls painted with mythological frescoes, ceilings gilded with gold. What had once been the house of the people became the stage for princely splendor. At the heart of this transformation was Eleonora di Toledo. Eleonora di Toledo, the Spanish Duchess. Eleonora was no ordinary consort. Born in Spain, daughter of the Viceroy of Naples, she brought with her immense wealth, powerful connections, and a taste for refinement. Cosimo adored her, and together they had 11 children, heirs who would secure the Medici line for generations. But Eleonora was more than a mother. She was a patron of art, a woman of faith, and a powerful political figure. She wanted a residence that reflected her status, her Spanish heritage, and her devotion. And so, her apartments inside the Palazzo Vecchio became among the most beautiful spaces in Florence. The apartments of Eleonora di Toledo. Step into Eleonora's rooms, and you step into a Renaissance jewel box. Her audience chamber was decorated by Giorgio Vasari and his workshop with scenes celebrating strong and virtuous women of antiquity, heroines of faith and loyalty who reflected Eleonora's own virtues. Her bedroom was more than a place of rest. It was a stage for dynastic motherhood, adorned with tapestries and frescoes that linked her image to legendary queens and goddesses. But the most enchanting space of all was her private chapel, Eleonora's Chapel, a jewel of faith. Hidden within her apartment lies a small but dazzling chapel, painted by Agnolo Bronzino, court painter and one of the masters of mannerism. As you enter, let your eyes adjust to the rich glow of color. Bronzino covered the walls with frescoes of biblical scenes. The Annunciation, where the Virgin receives the angel's message. The Nativity, with delicate figures shimmering in jewel-like hues. The Deposition, Christ's body lowered from the cross, rendered with Bronzino's cool elegance. The ceiling bursts with heavenly visions, angels and saints floating in a radiant sky. This was Eleonora's sanctuary, her private refuge from the demands of court life. Here she prayed, surrounded not by grandeur but by intimacy. Life in the Medici court. Beyond these sacred walls, daily life in the Palazzo Vecchio buzzed with activity. Imagine the corridors filled with pages, guards, courtiers, secretaries, artists, and diplomats. In Cosimo's audience chamber, ambassadors from Spain, France, and the Holy Roman Empire waited nervously, aware that Florence under the Medici was no longer a small republic but a ducal state rising in power. In Eleonora's apartments, musicians performed madrigals, seamstresses embroidered gowns, and tutors taught the Medici children Latin, philosophy, and the sciences. The palace became a city within a city, a theater where politics, family, art, and faith were woven together. Cosimo's Studiolo, a world of secrets. Not far from the grand chambers lies one of the most intriguing rooms in the palace, Cosimo Studiolo, or study. This was not a study in the modern sense, but a chamber of wonders. Its walls were covered with paintings of mythological scenes, each hiding secret cupboards behind them. Inside were kept rare minerals, scientific instruments, manuscripts, and treasures from the Medici collections. It was a room of secrets, where the Duke withdrew into thought, surrounded by symbols of nature, alchemy, and mythology. Vasari's secret passages. But the Palazzo Vecchio held more than symbolic secrets, it held real ones. Cosimo and Vasari designed a network of hidden corridors and staircases running through the palace walls. These secret passages allowed the Duke to move unseen, to escape in times of danger, or to surprise his courtiers with sudden appearances. One famous passage connects the Palazzo Vecchio with the Uffizi Gallery, then across the Ponte Vecchio Bridge, all the way to the Pitti Palace. This Vasari corridor allowed the Medici to move between their residences without mingling with the crowds of Florence. Even within the palace, these hidden doors and staircases whisper of intrigue, escapes, conspiracies, and the paranoia of rulers who trusted few. The Arnolfo Tower, power in prison. Now let us raise our eyes to the sky, to the Torre di Arnolfo, the Arnolfo Tower, named after the architect Arnolfo di Cambio who designed the palace in 1299. Soaring 95 meters above Florence, the tower was both a symbol of civic pride and a tool of defense. From here, guards could watch for fires, invasions, or uprisings. Bells were tolled to summon citizens in times of crisis, but the tower was not only a watchtower. It was also a prison, the Alberghetto, Little Inn of Misery. Inside the tower lies a tiny cell known as the Alberghetto or Little Inn. The name may sound gentle, but its reality was grim. Here, political prisoners awaited their fate. Among the most famous was Cosimo de' Medici the Elder, who was imprisoned here in 1433 before being exiled from Florence. He later returned triumphant, founding the dynasty that would rule for centuries. Another prisoner was Savonarola, the fiery friar, who spent his last nights here before being dragged to the square below and executed. The cell's cramped walls echo with the ghosts of Florence's turbulent past, a reminder that power and downfall were separated by only a heartbeat. The view from above. If you climb the tower today, you will be rewarded with one of the most breathtaking views in Florence. The red-tiled roofs stretch toward the green Tuscan hills. The Duomo's dome rises majestically, Giotto's bell tower stands tall, and the Arno River glitters in the sunlight. It is a view that connects past and present, a panorama that rulers, guards, and prisoners once shared. Standing here, you feel the heartbeat of Florence, a city that has survived wars, plagues, conspiracies, and revolutions, always rising again in beauty. Palazzo Vecchio Audio Guide, Part 3, Civic Power, Conspiracies, and City Hall, a fortress of civic power. As you walk through these stone corridors, remember that Palazzo Vecchio was more than a home for dukes, it was first and foremost the House of Florence itself. When construction began in 1299, Arnolfo di Cambio's vision was not of a royal palace, but of a fortress of democracy. The building was designed to embody the strength of the Signoria, Florence's ruling council of priors chosen from the city's guilds. The crenellated walls, the high tower, and the thick defensive structure sent a clear message: this was a palace of the people, standing as a shield against tyranny. Inside, chambers hosted the Priori dell'Arti, representatives of Florence's guilds, the backbone of the Republic. Here, laws were debated, alliances formed, and judgments passed. But Florence was never free from rivalry. Its wealth and pride made it both a jewel and a battlefield. And Palazzo Vecchio became the stage for some of the most dramatic conspiracies of the Renaissance. The shadow of conspiracy. To rule Florence was both a privilege and a peril. Power attracted enemies like moths to flame, and within these very halls, whispers of treachery often echoed louder than the tolling bells of the tower. One of the most infamous episodes in Florentine history was the Pazzi Conspiracy of 1478. Though it unfolded inside the Duomo, the shockwaves rattled the Palazzo Vecchio for decades. The powerful Pazzi family, allied with the Pope, plotted to assassinate Lorenzo de' Medici, Lorenzo the Magnificent, and his brother Giuliano. On a Sunday morning, during High Mass in the Cathedral of Santa Maria del Fiore, the conspirators struck. Giuliano was killed, but Lorenzo escaped with his life. The city erupted. The conspirators were captured and dragged here, to the Palazzo Vecchio. Some were executed by being hurled from the windows of this very tower, their bodies swinging as a warning to others. From that day, the palace was not only the heart of government, but also a place of judgment, vengeance, and fear. Machiavelli and the Republic. When the Medici were exiled again in 1494, Florence entered a new republican phase. and with it rose one of the most brilliant and controversial minds of political history, Niccolò Machiavelli. Machiavelli served as secretary to the Republic, working in offices inside Palazzo Vecchio. From here he drafted reports, organized diplomacy, and directed Florence's militia. He believed that citizen soldiers were the true defenders of liberty, not mercenaries. He argued that politics was not about ideals but about power, necessity, and survival. His writings, later collected in works such as The Prince and the Discourses, were rooted in the very experiences he lived within these walls. Imagine him pacing these corridors, pen in hand, contemplating the delicate balance of power that kept Florence alive amid enemies and rivals. Even after his exile, Machiavelli's shadow lingered here, a reminder that politics is as much about calculation as it is about ideals. Savonarola's trial, the Palazzo Vecchio also became a courtroom of destiny. After years of fire and brimstone sermons, Girolamo Savonarola was arrested in 1498 and brought here for trial. Tortured and interrogated in these very chambers, he was condemned as a heretic. Soon after, he was taken to the piazza outside, executed and burned, his ashes scattered into the Arno. For centuries afterward, Florentines whispered that his ghost still wandered the palace corridors, crying out against corruption. From Republic to Duchy. In 1530, everything changed once again. The Medici returned, this time backed by imperial power, and Florence ceased to be a republic. The Palazzo Vecchio was renamed the Palazzo Ducale, the Ducal Palace, as Cosimo I transformed it into his residence. The old council chambers were refashioned into Medici propaganda halls. Democracy gave way to dynastic power. Yet the building never lost its civic role. Even as a ducal palace, it remained the administrative brain of Florence. And when Cosimo later moved to the Pitti Palace, this fortress once again took the name it holds today, Palazzo Vecchio, the Old Palace. 19th century, a nation is born. Centuries later, Palazzo Vecchio found itself at the center of history again. In 1865, Florence was chosen as the capital of the newly united Kingdom of Italy. The Palazzo Vecchio became the seat of the Italian Parliament. Imagine the excitement. In this medieval fortress, the representatives of a new nation gathered to shape Italy's future. Speeches echoed under Vasari's painted ceilings, uniting regions that had been divided for centuries. Though Florence held the capital for only 6 years, before it moved to Rome, the palace forever carries the honor of having been the birthplace of Italy's first parliamentary debates. Palazzo Vecchio today. And so we arrive at the present. Palazzo Vecchio is no longer the residence of dukes or the prison of friars. Today, it is both a museum and Florence's city hall. Inside, you will find masterpieces of art, historic chambers, and civic offices. The mayor of Florence still works within these walls, linking past and present in a living continuum. Every year, weddings are celebrated in the Sala Rosa, conferences held in its chambers, and visitors from around the world walk the same floors once trod by Machiavelli, Savonarola, Cosimo and Eleonora. Palazzo Vecchio is not just a monument. It is a living palace, a building that breathes, works, and serves, just as it has for more than 700 years. Reflections before we continue. As you stand here, pause and reflect. The Palazzo Vecchio has been a fortress of democracy, a stage for conspiracy, a ducal palace, a prison, a parliament, a modern city hall. Its stones are soaked with the voices of every era, guild masters, friars, dukes, republicans, revolutionaries, artists, and citizens. Few buildings in the world carry such a layered history, where every corner tells a story, and every story mirrors the eternal struggle between freedom and power. From politics to art. Welcome back, dear guest of EU Tours. So far, we have walked through the great halls of power, heard the stories of conspiracies, friars, dukes, and republics. Now, let us turn our eyes to the artistic soul of the Palazzo Vecchio. Each chamber of this palace is not just a room, it is a stage, a gallery, a living fresco of Florence's past. Together, let us wander through them, slowly and carefully, as if time itself were guiding us. The Quartieri Monumentali, monumental apartments. We begin with the Quartieri Monumentali, the grand apartments created by Giorgio Vasari for Duke Cosimo I and Eleonora di Toledo. Here, art was never decoration alone, it was propaganda in paint. Every ceiling, every wall, every panel told a story designed to elevate the Medici family. Look above you, Vasari painted intricate allegories of the virtues, the planets, and the triumphs of Florence. The ceilings glitter with gilded frames, each square a miniature epic. The apartments were divided into two groups, the Quartiere di Leone X, dedicated to the Medici Pope, celebrating the glory of the family's religious power. The Quartieri degli Elementi, where the very forces of nature, fire, water, air, and earth, are depicted as if they themselves bowed to the Medici. Step inside these rooms, and you walk through a painted universe where art and politics blend seamlessly. The Sala del Carte Geografiche, the map room. Now, let us enter one of the most fascinating chambers of all, the Sala del Carte Geografiche, the Hall of Maps. Created in the mid-16th century by Vasari and the cosmographer Ignazio Danci, this room was a marvel of Renaissance science and imagination. Around you, enormous painted panels display maps of the known world, Italy, Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. Remember, this was a time when the globe was still being discovered, when new lands astonished the imagination. At the center stands a magnificent globe, once among the largest in the world, a symbol of Medici curiosity and ambition. The purpose of this room was not only intellectual but also symbolic, to show that under the Medici, Florence's influence extended across the globe. Notice how some lands are drawn with strange shapes, reflecting the limits of knowledge of the time. Yet even in their imperfection, these maps embody the wonder of discovery. The Studiolo of Francesco I. Next, we step into one of the palace's most mysterious chambers, the Studiolo of Francesco I, son of Cosimo and Eleonora. Small, windowless, and covered entirely in paintings and cabinets, this studiolo was a private retreat, a world of alchemy, art, and science. Each panel depicts mythological scenes linked to the four elements and to human knowledge. Behind many of the paintings were hidden cupboards, where Francesco stored rare minerals, scientific instruments, and exotic curiosities brought to Florence from across the world. Imagine standing in this secret jewel box, surrounded by the mysteries of art and nature. It is like stepping inside the mind of a Renaissance prince, fascinated by beauty, obsessed with knowledge, drawn to secrets. The Sala dei Gigli, Hall of Lilies. One of the most splendid civic chambers is the Sala dei Gigli, the Hall of Lilies. Its name comes from the fleur-de-lis, the emblem of Florence, which decorates the walls. Painted by Domenico Ghirlandaio and his workshop, the room is a masterpiece of Florentine elegance. Here stands one of the palace's treasures, the statue of Judith and Holofernes by Donatello, a symbol of civic virtue triumphing over tyranny. In this hall, ambassadors were received, laws proclaimed, and the pride of Florence displayed. Even today, the gilded lilies shine as if to remind us that beauty and politics have always danced together in this city. The Hall of Hercules. Another room bears frescoes of Hercules, the mythological hero known for his strength and courage. Why Hercules? Because he was the legendary protector of Florence, a symbol that resonated with citizens who saw themselves as strong, resilient, and defiant against tyrants. The Medici, too, embraced Hercules, presenting themselves as heirs to his virtues, conquerors of challenges, and rulers by divine strength. Eleonora's Chapel Revisited. We have already spoken of Eleonora di Toledo's private chapel by Bronzino. But it deserves another pause, for this room is not only art but intimacy. Notice Bronzino's cold yet jewel-like style, the porcelain faces, the shimmering fabrics, the ethereal angels. This was mannerism at its height, a world where reality was polished into divine elegance. For Eleonora, this was more than beauty. It was her spiritual anchor, where she prayed for her children, her husband, and her city. Michelangelo's hidden bust. Among the palace's surprises lies a bust attributed to Michelangelo Buonarroti, the so-called Brutus. It is believed to depict the Roman assassin of Caesar, a symbol of liberty against tyranny. For Florentines, Brutus was not only ancient history but also a mirror of their own struggle against Medici rule. Michelangelo, who loved Florence yet often clashed with its rulers, carved this face with a mixture of pride and defiance. Hidden away in the palace, it stands as a silent protest in marble, tapestries, and triumphs. Do not forget to admire the Medici tapestries that adorn many of the rooms. Woven in the Grand Ducal workshops, they depict biblical stories, heroic deeds, and Medici triumphs. Their rich colors and intricate designs brought warmth to the stone halls, transforming cold walls into shimmering fabrics of narrative and prestige. Each tapestry was not only a work of art but also a political tool, a reminder that the Medici's grandeur wrapped itself around every corner of life. A palace of layers. As you walk from chamber to chamber, remember this, the Palazzo Vecchio is not a single story, but a tapestry of layers. Medieval fortress. Republican council. Medici residence. Wunderkammer of science. Gallery of Maps, Chapel of Devotion, Civic Hall of Lilies and Heroes. Every room reflects not only the Medici, but the people of Florence, their pride, their anxieties, their ambitions, their faith. It is as if the very stones of the palace were painted, carved, and woven with the identity of the city itself. Palazzo Vecchio Audio Guide, Part 5, Secrets, Legends and Mysteries. Welcome to the Palace of Secrets. Dear guest of EU Tours, you have already seen the grandeur of the Salone dei Cinquecento, the elegance of Eleonora's chapel, and the glory of Vasari's painted ceilings. But now it is time to discover another side of Palazzo Vecchio, a side hidden in whispers, shadows, and mysteries. For this palace is not only history, it is legend. Behind its walls are secrets that still puzzle historians, and stories that Florentines pass down from generation to generation. Let us begin with one of the most intriguing clues left in plain sight. The mystery of Cerca Trova. In the Salone dei Cinquecento, among Vasari's massive frescoes of Medici victories, there is a small but curious detail. On a green battle standard, painted high above, are two words, Cerca Trova, seek and you shall find. Why did Vasari paint these words? Some believe it was a secret message. Beneath Vasari's frescoes may still lie Leonardo da Vinci's unfinished Battle of Anghiari, the lost masterpiece of the Renaissance. Did Vasari preserve Leonardo's work by painting over it, hiding it but not destroying it? Did he leave these words as a clue for future generations? Modern investigations with scanners and probes have revealed traces of pigment behind the wall, evidence that perhaps Leonardo's furious horses and soldiers are still there, waiting to be found. So when you look up and see Cerca Trova, remember, Palazzo Vecchio may still be keeping Leonardo's ghost within its walls. Michelangelo's secret graffiti. Outside the palace, in Piazza della Signoria, look closely at the stone near the entrance. You will see the faint outline of a man's profile carved into the wall. According to legend, this was drawn by Michelangelo Buonarroti himself. The story says that while talking with someone in the square, Michelangelo, always restless, absent-mindedly scratched the profile of a man into the stone with his chisel, perhaps a portrait of the man who annoyed him, perhaps a self-caricature, or perhaps just a playful mark of genius. To this day, Florentines call it Il Importuno di Michelangelo, Michelangelo's bored man. A little reminder that even the greatest artist in history once left graffiti on these very stones. The Vasari Corridor, a secret passage. Perhaps the most famous secret of all is the Vasari Corridor. Built in 1565 for Duke Cosimo I by Giorgio Vasari, this passageway runs from the Palazzo Vecchio, through the Uffizi Gallery, over the Ponte Vecchio Bridge, and all the way to the Pitti Palace. Why was it built? Because Cosimo and his family wanted to move safely and privately through the city, far from the eyes and daggers of the people. Inside the corridor were windows to spy on the city below, and later it was decorated with a unique collection of portraits, including self-portraits by artists from around the world. Even today, the corridor remains a symbol of the Medici's need for control, secrecy, and security. It is a bridge between palaces, but also between worlds, public and private, power and paranoia. The ghost of Savonarola. But Palazzo Vecchio is not only filled with hidden art and passages. It is also said to be haunted. The most famous ghost is that of Girolamo Savonarola, the Dominican friar who preached against corruption, wealth, and vice. After his arrest, he was held in the Alberghetto prison cell inside the Arnolfo Tower. Tortured, condemned, and executed in the piazza below, he left behind a restless spirit. Florentines whisper that on stormy nights, a shadowy figure in a friar's robe walks the corridors, murmuring prayers or curses. Some claim they hear chains dragging across the stone floors. Whether ghost or memory, Savonarola's presence lingers here, reminding us of Florence's darkest days. Whispers of conspiracy. Palazzo Vecchio has also been the setting for countless conspiracies. Some are well known, others only rumors. They say that hidden chambers were built inside the walls to eavesdrop on meetings. Secret staircases allowed dukes to appear suddenly and catch their courtiers by surprise. Messages were passed through paintings, symbols hidden in frescoes, codes written into decoration. One tale speaks of the Medici poison cabinet, where bottles of deadly concoctions were stored to eliminate rivals discreetly. Was it true? No one knows for certain. But in Florence, where art and intrigue were siblings, anything was possible. The prisoners' scratches. In the tower cells, political prisoners often carved marks into the walls. Some left prayers, others curses. One scratched a simple phrase, "Chi mi leg, preghi per me," whoever reads this, pray for me. These scratches remain, silent testimonies of those who lived and died here. They remind us that behind the glitter of Medici wealth, the palace also held despair, fear, and punishment. Legends of the Lion Courtyard. In the palace's courtyard once stood cages holding live lions, the symbol of Florence. The animals were gifts and trophies, roaring reminders of the city's power. Children would sneak close to hear them growl, travelers marveled at their majesty, and courtiers whispered that as long as the lions lived, Florence would remain unconquered. When the last lion died, some said it was an omen of Florence's decline. A palace of endless mysteries. And so, as you explore Palazzo Vecchio, remember, not every story is written in history books. Some are carved quietly into stone, painted behind layers of fresco, or whispered in the night by shadows that refuse to fade. Palazzo Vecchio is a palace of power, yes. But it is also a palace of secrets. A palace that still breathes. Dear guest of EU Tours, you have walked through centuries of history, through Republican councils, Medici courts, secret corridors, prisons, and painted wonders. But Palazzo Vecchio is not only a monument of the past. It is a palace that still breathes today. Unlike many other historic buildings that stand as silent museums, this palace continues to serve the same purpose it has held since the Middle Ages. It is the beating heart of Florence's civic life. Florence's City Hall. Step into the modern offices hidden within these walls, and you will find something remarkable. The mayor of Florence and the city council still govern from here. The same chambers that once hosted guild masters, priors, and dukes now see council meetings, civic ceremonies, and the day-to-day running of the city. The building's dual identity, both museum and government palace, makes it unique in the world. Where else can you walk through Vasari's frescoes in the morning and see a wedding or official council meeting in the afternoon? Weddings in the Sala Rosa. One of the most magical modern uses of the palace is as a wedding hall. The Sala Rosa, or Red Room, with its crimson tapestries and golden chandeliers, is where couples from all over the world come to be married in Florence's most iconic building. Imagine the joy, as history watches from the walls. New stories are written, vows exchanged, and lives begin together in the same palace that has seen so much destiny unfold. For many, it is the most romantic experience Florence can offer. The Arnolfo Tower today. Climb the Arnolfo Tower and you will see why this palace has stood the test of time. From its height, Florence stretches before you, the Duomo rising like a mountain of marble, the Arno flowing through the city, the Tuscan hills rolling in the distance. Visitors from across the world climb these steps every day, retracing the footsteps of guards, prisoners, and dukes. And as you look out, remember, you are seeing the same view that Cosimo de' Medici, Savonarola, and even Machiavelli once saw. A view that has changed little in 700 years. The museum experience. As a museum, Palazzo Vecchio offers treasures that no visitor should miss. The Salone dei Cinquecento, with Vasari's immense frescoes and the mystery of Leonardo's hidden painting.
The Studiolo of Francesco I, a cabinet of curiosities like no other.
The Hall of Maps, where Renaissance dreams of the world unfold on painted panels. The Chapel of Eleonora, glowing with Bronzino's sacred elegance. The Hall of Lilies, shimmering with Donatello's Judith and the golden fleur-de-lis. Each room is both a gallery and a story, and together, they create a journey that blends art, politics, science, and faith. Palazzo Vecchio at night. For those who visit after sunset, the palace transforms again. Illuminated by golden light, its stone facade seems almost alive, as if the centuries themselves glow from within. Night tours reveal hidden corners, empty halls filled with echoes, and views of Florence glittering in the dark. It is said that the palace is most magical at night, when the crowds are gone and history whispers more clearly. Palazzo Vecchio today, a living symbol of Florence. Today, Palazzo Vecchio rises above Piazza della Signoria with the same crenellated walls and proud Arnolfo Tower that have dominated the Florentine skyline since 1299. Yet this building is no frozen monument. It has changed, adapted, and redefined itself with every generation, and it continues to do so in the present. From fortress to civic museum, in its early centuries, Palazzo Vecchio was a fortress palace, the seat of the Florentine Republic, and later the ducal residence of Cosimo I de' Medici. But when the Medici moved to Palazzo Pitti in the 16th century, the old palace did not fall silent. Instead, it was gradually transformed into a civic museum and town hall, preserving its dual identity as both government seat and cultural treasure. Today, the mayor of Florence and the city council still meet inside these walls. Few Renaissance palaces in Europe remain so closely tied to their original civic function. Visitors walking through its courtyards and chambers are not just exploring a museum, they are stepping into the ongoing story of Florentine governance. A museum of power and beauty. At the same time, Palazzo Vecchio is now one of Florence's great museums. Its rooms unfold like chapters in a grand history book. The Salone dei Cinquecento, with Vasari's monumental frescoes, still overwhelms visitors with its scale and with the mystery of Leonardo da Vinci's lost Battle of Anghiari, possibly hidden beneath Vasari's paint. The private apartments of the Medici Dukes, decorated with lavish frescoes, transport visitors into the daily lives of Florence's rulers.
The Studiolo of Francesco I, a jewel box of mannerist art, still dazzles with its secret doors and cabinets of curiosities.
The Tower of Arnolfo remains one of the best vantage points in Florence, where citizens and travelers alike can gaze over the red rooftops and Brunelleschi's dome. Every room today tells a story, not only of the past but also of the pride Florence continues to take in its identity. A stage for culture and community. Beyond being a museum, Palazzo Vecchio is a stage for culture. Exhibitions, lectures, concerts, and civic events animate its spaces. Florentines gather in its courtyard for festivals, and scholars from around the world study its frescoes and archives. It bridges the gap between a civic house and a global cultural icon, symbol of Florence's spirit. Above all, Palazzo Vecchio today is a symbol of Florence itself. Its rugged medieval walls embody the strength of the old republic. Its elegant Renaissance interiors reflect the creativity and ambition of the Medici. And its living civic role shows how the city continues to balance past and present. To walk through its doors today is to encounter Florence in its entirety, the memory of battles fought for liberty, the genius of artists and architects, the continuity of civic life, and the embrace of millions of visitors who come here every year to stand where history was made. Palazzo Vecchio today is more than stone, more than art. It is Florence, enduring, evolving, and alive. Farewell message. And now, dear guest of EU Tours, our journey through Palazzo Vecchio draws to a close. You have walked where Machiavelli worked, where Savonarola prayed, where Cosimo ruled, where Vasari painted, where prisoners wept, and where artists dreamed. Remember, this palace is not a relic, it is Florence itself, alive with memory. As you step back into Piazza della Signoria, look once more at the tower above you. Its stones are the same that have stood for 7 centuries, but now they hold your memory too. Thank you for traveling with EU Tours. May the spirit of Florence, its beauty, its courage, and its endless creativity, stay with you long after you leave. All the sources for this audio content have been taken from the Liberty of UNESCO archives, the Vatican resources, and the Alexandrian cultural collections. Grazie, thank you, and arrivederci from EU Tours.